Welcome to the Caregiver's Toolbox, tools for everyday caregiving. We provide education and information on senior care topics. Here's your host, Ryan McInniff.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Caregiver's Toolbox, tools for everyday caregiving, where we give you information and education on senior care topics. My name is Ryan McInniff. I'm the owner of Minute Women Home Care, as well as the host of the Caregiver's Toolbox. I am here with Janet. Janet, how are you?
I am great. Did you see outside? There's a little snow flurry, so I'm a happy camper.
And today we have a special guest. We have Kathy Kemp. She is a geriatric care manager, and she is located in the Lexington, Arlington, Massachusetts area. And I thought it would be great to have her on, only because we have done a podcast before on, it was like the 7 reasons why we love geriatric care managers. But let's hear it from the source. So thank you very much for coming on, and we appreciate you coming in and giving us your point of view on some things.
Well, thank you. I'm really happy to be here, and I'm happy to share whatever you might be interested in.
All right. Excellent. Well, before we get into some of the questions, the topics we can talk about, how about you kind of go through, you can give whatever plugs you'd like if people want to reach out to you, if that's something you want to do, and then you can kind of go over, an overview of who you are and how you got into this and what kind of drew you to the GCM lifestyle, if you will.
Sure. I worked for over 25 years as an occupational therapist, primarily in geri medical psych and inpatient psychiatry units. But I also have had the opportunity to work in skilled nursing facilities and visiting nurse association. So I've had the opportunity as an OT to work in all different facets of care, and decided to start working as a GCM when I was invited to start the care management program at Springwell. And after that program was up and running and we were able to hire another person, I decided to go out and work independently. So I have my own practice called Sage Advice Care Management. I'm based in Arlington and I serve the surrounding communities. And I love what I do. It gives me so much more freedom than being confined to the roles dictated by occupational therapy. And I'm also a licensed social worker. So I have the ability to do whatever the client basically wants me to do. As a private pay service, it's not dictated by Medicare or somebody's guidelines about what I can and cannot do.
All right. And so what you were talking about when we first met, at a coffee shop over in Arlington, and we kind of got behind the scenes on, what brought me into this business and what brought you into this business. What is it about being, you've listed a few different occupations that you did. What is it about being a GCM that you're thrilled about versus some of those other occupations? What do you love about that GCM and helping people out in that way?
Well, I really like the fact that every day I wake up and I may have a certain schedule or agenda for that day, but you really never know what's going to happen. And so I enjoy that fly-by-the-seat-of-your-pants kind of lifestyle. It allows me to respond to people really in real time. I'll have scheduled appointments with people, but sometimes the phone will ring and there's a situation going on where I need to jump in right away, whether it be that somebody is on their way to the emergency room and I'll meet them there and make sure they get settled, or if their water pipe explodes and I need to call the plumber for them, or if somebody's having an emotionally hard time and they just need somebody to come by and give them some support.
How do people find out about you?
Various ways. I've been pleasantly surprised about the number of places that my clients come from. Many of them find me on the website for the Aging Life Care Association, which is the professional organization for what we call geriatric care managers, but officially now our name is Aging Life Care Professionals. And so people will find me through that website. A lot of it is word of mouth through things in my community, whether it be my church or the Chamber of Commerce or previous clients referring me to their friends or the adult children of elders. And I get referrals from elder law attorneys, financial planners, home care agencies, assisted living facilities. So it can really run the gamut. And the, you know, every client's needs are very different. And it's a little tough when someone calls and says, basically, you know, what can you do for me? My parents live alone and things are not, don't seem to be going well. You know, what is it that you do? Because it can be, the only sort of constant is that when I first meet with somebody, I do an assessment. And generally, I don't call it an assessment, and I just really start out by listening to what the older adult sees as their problem and become their ally in whatever their agenda is. My role often will expand beyond that, but everything starts out with listening to what the older adult wants to have happen, what they're not happy with or what they would like to see happen. Or sometimes the role starts when somebody's in a state of transition. So they're moving from the hospital into a rehab facility or from rehab to home, or deciding, should I go home? Should I go to an assisted living, possibly for a respite stay? If I'm going to go home, you know, how do I get good help in the home, how much help do I need, and how to prepare the environment for that successful transition, as sometimes, you know, their mobility may have changed or there are other things that have changed since they were last in the home.
I'm guessing that, like we deal with sometimes, it's the client themselves, they don't feel they need the help, but it's the family that sees, or the physician that clearly sees that they do. How do you navigate that, and how do you ally yourself with the client so mm-hmm. that they see the value when they don't think they need any?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's very much most frequently the case. And I think the real way it works is by establishing some rapport with that person. And again, being the person that they recognize is working for them. Even if the adult child is paying for my services, it really is the older adult that is my client, in the sense that I want to satisfy what their values and their needs are. And sometimes that may not be the safest thing, but like anybody else, you know, they're in a position to make their own choices, good or bad. Now, of course, this is different if there's dementia or some cognitive decline, and that's a different story. But mainly the way I kind of get in the door with the older adult is to become a warm, caring person that meets their needs. So they may identify their need as being how to safely get in and out of their shower, or usually the case might be that it takes too much energy for them to bathe, and they are interested in finding a solution so that they can bathe and still have energy to do what they want. Or they may decide that they really don't like that their family wants them to bathe every day, and, you know, how to deal with that. So once they see me as somebody that has something that can do something that they want, it usually opens the door to a more expanded role. You know, it sometimes might involve showing up at the door with scones and coffee and just coming in and doing a very brief check-in, and over time seeing the environment, seeing what's in that refrigerator when they open the door to get you milk for your tea, for example.
The three-week tuna salad sitting
yeah.
there.
Yeah, so things present themselves. But it's not my agenda. And I think the other side of the coin is also that families might worry that I sort of come in and say, you know, identify all kinds of things that aren't right and just say, you know, you need to do X, Y, and Z. Or the older adult certainly is afraid of that. And that's not my role. I often will give recommendations of things that really should have been done a year ago, those that you really need to do just about now, and things that you may think about down the line should your mobility change or your cognition, and people can pick and choose what they, you know, how they want to act.
Yeah, and that, and one of the two things that you mentioned that you know, made me, you know, think, oh, all right, yeah. You know, the first thing is so we're both business owners. You're your own business. I have, obviously, employees. But one of the things that's tough about being in business is you sit there sometimes and wonder, when's the next phone call coming? Because, you know, there's no perfect rhyme or reason for things. And it's unbelievable how word of mouth just spreads.
Absolutely.
And you get these calls from people and you're like, who is that? And, you know, it's just crazy how people just talk with one another. And the other thing that you mentioned that I do have a follow-up question is, you know, Janet touched on it a little bit, but like we do get a lot of business from people that the families are on board. You know, like Janet said, the senior's not on board, but they're just like, can you just go in and check the refrigerator? Or using the example, can you go in and just help mom out with some transportation a few times a week and then get in the house and make sure everything's looking okay? Is that where a lot of those clients that you have that maybe end up being your medium-sized clients or maybe your bigger-sized clients, do a lot of them start small, or do they generally start kind of like you just said before, a lot of bit behind the eight ball, where it's like we need to be doing things and catch up over the last year or two before we can even start the process of how we can help you with future and current issues? How does that work with those types of clients that you're seeing?
Well, I think you've got it right in that it usually starts out small. And I mean, I think by design, that's better so that you don't overwhelm people and that you make sure it's a good match. When there are certain needs that I will come in and identify, or the family will identify, and it will be my role to find potentially a different person to provide that service, because, you know, it would be less expensive to have a home care aide bring somebody to the appointment than me, but I may show up there and talk with the doctor with the client, for example. Or maybe they just need a companion to come in once a week for a cup of coffee to make those kinds of observations under my direction.
Sure.
And check in with me. So, you know, I am a business owner, but I also recognize that this is people's money, and my job is to find, you know, the best match for their situation, and sometimes that means referring to others. An important role I play, too, is to make people aware of any entitlements they might have. There are certain services available through the state that are only based on income, not assets. So there are many folks out there who might be eligible to receive a few hours of homemaking or home care a month that don't know about it, or people that have long-term care insurance and don't recognize that they really are in a position to start the claim.
Yeah.
Or veterans benefits. There's all kinds of entitlements that people sometimes don't know about or don't know how to activate.
And obviously the cost of having you involved is the return on that investment is outstanding, because all of a sudden they're saving a lot of money by being able to use their LTC or whatever entitlements they have over paying privately for somebody like us when they can be reimbursed for that.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I mean, the reason I kind of brought up that question is I think a lot of times, and we get those calls where people are like, well, can you just do a little bit of this, or can you do a little bit of that? And, you know, we take every opportunity, you know, as they come, and we look at it. But sometimes I think people are a little worried to pick up the phone and call somebody because they're like, well, I'm just too small of a little case. Nobody really, you know, nobody's going to want to help us out in that case. And then you realize, well, no, this is exactly what we'll do. And you never know when those small cases turn into something, you know, that's ongoing or whatever it might be.
Absolutely. That happens a lot. I think the gotcha on that, well, that's not the right term, but what you need to be mindful of is that I can take a very small job, a piece of something, but to do it effectively and responsibly, usually you need enough information of the background. For example, you know, what their medical history is, what medications they're on, things like that will dictate what you might recommend or how you might approach them. So it's a delicate balance before imposing too much on a person, mm-hmm. and protecting their safety and making good recommendations with the information that you have. So, you know, financial status is important because you need to, my recommendations will vary depending on what resources they have.
Sure.
So most people don't like to disclose their financial information. It's not something I have to know right off the bat, but there's certain things that have to be disclosed over time for me to best advise people.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, even when we have those conversations, like with families, we'll say, hey, listen, I know you're using private home care, but you're hoping to go to a nursing home at some point in time. Well, we don't know what your finances are, but you might want to start looking at nursing homes when you have, you know, $60,000 to $100,000 left at the very minimum, because then you can, you know, get your pick of the litter a little bit, if I can use that terminology. And so, you know, we don't know people's finances, but we do try to help them as best we can if we can get them to open up a little bit and say, hey, like, you know, we're happy to help you out until you're no longer wanting to use us. But if you're looking to go to the nursing home or looking to go somewhere else, this is what we would advise. So that's that, you know, that's an important step. And I think if you're going to get a GCM, then you need to be willing to be open about that type of stuff, because they can't help you unless you give them that information.
Sure.
Not that it needs to be on a billboard outside either, right. But you know, that's part of getting that help and that advice from somebody like yourself.
How do you choose some of your resources for a particular client? Like, you see they need a little bit of housekeeping or a little bit of companion or caregiving. How do you recommend, or what is the process that you go through to decide which of your resources you might recommend to them? How does that work?
Well, there are people that I've worked with over time that I trust and respect, and they will be my sort of go-to people, but I always provide people with options. So, you know, if there's any way at all, I won't just say, you know, this is the person that can do this, or I won't just say, I'll take care of that and have someone walk in the door. It's important to give people options and explain what the differences are. Someone might have the same title as somebody else and be very different. And by knowing my resources, by knowing the folks out there, sometimes it's a matter of personality style that I may encourage one person over another or one agency over another. I mean, there's so much variability among many things, as you know, as home care providers. All things are not equal.
Yeah.
And money, you know, usually the cost is, you know, they're all sort of in the same ballpark for the most part, but you really need to know who you're working with and what services they actually can provide, and how to handle any kind of conflict that may arise between a caregiver and the elder themselves. And that very rarely is a problem, but sometimes working with a good agency, you're much more able to smooth that out, and you get caregivers that are more informed and are supported by their employers. You know, you want to have a caregiver who has a great employer and is treated well by the agency.
All right. Go ahead.
Do you find it hard sometimes when the services that you're going to put in place that are acceptable are small hours or little things? I mean, most home care agencies, for the sake of their staff, I mean, they're staff is in heaven when they get the long hours and all of that. But a lot of times starting out or introducing mom or dad to various kinds of services, you know, is do you find that harder sometimes to come up with the resources you need when it's for a small amount of time?
Absolutely. That was something that when Ryan and I were talking, I was saying is a great value of Minute Women services, because you're willing to start small and grow as the client's needs change. And it's really awful if somebody's budget doesn't allow for them to have, you know, 6 or 8 hours of care a day, and maybe their needs aren't that big, and they end up going without because there's nobody that's willing to start small. I think it's nice when you can start small. Also, when your needs are minimal, it can be much less threatening to have someone come in your home for a few hours a day. If all of a sudden, you know, your family or it becomes clear you need help, and all of a sudden someone's at your door, you know, and with you all day for 8 hours, that's a huge adjustment. So the folks that start small, I think the transition goes better. They develop trust with the caregiver, and over time allow a lot more help than they ever would have allowed if they had to, you know, buy the farm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I just actually did a video over the weekend for our YouTube channel, which was all about how to introduce home care. And and basically was all about trying to do those kind of outer edge services, meal preparation, transportation, anything other than like hardcore personal care and being with somebody 10 hours a day. Because, hey, you know what, Mom and Dad, you can cook all you want, but isn't it nice not to have to cook and clean up after yourself? Isn't it nice to have somebody to take out the trash for you and then all of a sudden you can position that into, hey, you know what, you've worked hard, you're retired, you don't like to cook anyways, and when you need to have a bit more nutritious meal, this isn't providing care for you, it's just helping you out. And then all of a sudden that is what allows the door to be opened a little bit, where somebody then gets, instead of 8 hours a day, maybe they get 8 hours a week of help. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, as somebody declines, then they're used to that person being around, or the circumstances are easier to kind of change. So we totally agree on that. A question I do have for you is, you know, one of the things that we have families struggle with, and it's always tough to go into a home under these conditions, and it's very related to what we just talked about, is when the situation is, hey, Mom, hey, Dad, you've fallen 4 times. If you don't want to go into a nursing home, you need to accept private home care. Not exactly the circumstances we love walking into, because, you know, there's obviously a little bit of infighting going on. Somebody's mm-hmm. resistant to this, mm-hmm. but, you know, they're trying to rip off that Band-Aid, and they've gotten to a point. How does somebody bring up, how do your potential clients and families bring up the idea of getting a geriatric care manager into the home? How do they do that in the best possible way that makes it successful while allowing that senior to feel like they're in control, and then this is their kind of their choice, so they're involved in this process? How have you found successful families bringing that up in the past?
Well, again, there's a variety of situations that are all very different. Often it will be introducing care as somebody, for example, who would be a driver. Like, if whatever they see as their challenges or limitations. Now, driving is a whole other story, but if you can introduce the person that, to, like you say, to do one small task, this is a person that will do the things that you certainly, you know, you could do, but like you say, you choose not to. If you only have a certain amount of time in the day or energy, you need to pick and choose what things you most value and, you know, think about things that you could let go of. So it's not that you can't mow the lawn, but is that the way you really want to spend, you know, your morning, when then the rest of the day you can't go out and play bridge with your friends because you're tired, or, you know, to adjust it to what their values really are in life. And also to remind them that ideally these caregivers that come in are not there to do something to them. It's with them, sometimes for them, but really with them. And to remind them that they're in charge. Things should be done the way they like them to do. And often with folks, they don't want to have somebody clean the kitchen because they don't do it just right.
Yeah.
And, you know, finding that balance of letting them know that they're in control, define exactly what they want done, and make sure that the caregiver appreciates this this idiosyncrasy and will respect and follow that.
Yeah, every situation is, of course, different. So it's tough to have a blanket statement. But, you know, the introduction of a GCM is got to be an important part of that process going on. Now, is there just another question I know I had emailed over to you that I think is pertinent to people that are learning about care managers, learning about this? What is the onboarding process for somebody like you? How does that process look like when somebody is from thinking about it to we're gonna go forward with your services? How does that look? Are there interviews? Is there contracts that need to be signed?
Oh, sure.
What does the payments look like? What is that type of stuff? That kind of nitty gritty of how things has, you know, you don't have to tell your rates or anything, but in general, how does that look like, at least in the Massachusetts area, for people in your industry?
Well, I can't speak for the whole industry, of course, but the way it works for me is I usually will get a phone call or sometimes an email, and somebody will tell me their story, or you know, often they'll say, call me up and say, well, you know, like I said, what is it you do? And in some ways, I don't mean to be glib, but it's like, what don't I do?
Yeah.
But it, you know, I don't charge anything for people to call me up and either interview me to screen me for choosing among other care managers, or just to learn about, you know, who I am and what potentially I could offer. And then we will discuss rates and sort of protocol for business. But I have a service agreement, and the way I work is not the same for everybody, but I don't take a retainer. I charge by the hour, which includes time for phone calls, emails, anything that's done on the client's behalf, but of course with their approval. So I don't see an opportunity to do some service and take the ball and run with it. It's very much within the person's budget and their parameters, and I don't require any kind of commitment. So we're working together when we're working together. The only commitment is that you will pay for services that I provide. So at any time, if you say, I think we're stable, things are set for now, you know, thanks very much, that's fine. And they could call me up a year later when something changes, and often that will happen.
All right.
And and then there's like a form that releases people from liability, me from liability, for example. So if I'm taking a client to an appointment and someone drives into us at a red light, that I won't be responsible for that. But my insurance and my credential as a licensed occupational therapy allows me to drive people in my car, because as a licensed OT, I am trained in how to help people transfer in and out of the car. And I can also supervise others and train others how to do that.
All right, excellent. And then, Jenna, do you have any more? I've got a gang of questions.
I was going to say we could talk for hours on different things. And I think of the kind of things I think of are people that what is your approach with, say, the children of the client that needs help? And, you know, they can't really appreciate, I mean, we love you people to death, but to appreciate the amount of time it takes to accomplish some things, especially where it's making appointments, when it's organizing things like that. And they don't have an appreciation for that. So all they see is a cost of something. How do you bridge that so that they understand the true value of what they're getting?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, the short answer is really that I provide a very detailed invoice. And so if it takes me 10 phone calls to finally get through to the doctor, you know, it will be reflected in my bill. But if you are somebody that has been providing this role for your mother or father, you do know quite well how long that can take.
Yeah.
But I can, you know, I sort of bundle tasks like that, so you wouldn't be paying, you know, for every call independently. The other thing that takes a long time, for example, is long-term care insurance claim procedure, and the amount of time that you spend on the phone and faxing and tracking down the right person, and then, you know,
doing it over 15 more times.
Yeah.
And they're not all the same, the different companies. This wants this form, this wants that form. And
well, even within each policy that the same company, but each policy can be very different in how they work. So it can be a very complicated thing. But I haven't found people to, I don't get complaints about my fees. You know, when people get an invoice at the end of the month, there should never be any surprises, and it doesn't seem to happen that way. Sometimes people will initially say, well, gee, you know, kind of grumble, oh, you know, do I really need to pay this for a care manager? But often down the road, it pays for itself in so many ways. If it's, you mean, you can't measure things that don't happen, but the fact that someone comes in and does if I come in and do a very thorough safety evaluation and some small changes are made, you know, and it prevents a hip fracture and that whole story, there's no price tag you can put on that. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, another example is I had a client who was a very cranky, unhappy man living alone in the community and had alienated a lot of people. And the way that I got in the door with him was to, he was having trouble with his cell phone. And his doctor wanted him to have a care manager because he was calling all the time and confused with his voicemail, and it was a long, complicated story, but it was something like that, like helping him figure out his phone and ultimately get him a different phone, like a jitterbug phone that's more user friendly. So I went in with a specific thing to offer this angry man, and he had a fair amount of money. I mean, I didn't know any specifics, but his lawyer let me know, you know, he can afford your services and he really needs them. So the client reluctantly agreed, and I worked with him for a number of months, bringing in a home care agency, which was a difficult process because he burned through caregivers really quickly, and it could get ugly. But so ultimately, we did we did a good chunk of work together, and then one day he said, you know, you're a waste of money, you know, goodbye, and you know. We had developed a warmth, actually, surprisingly, between us. But, you know, we both just kind of smiled, and it was okay. And so about a year later, his financial planner called me and said, you know, Fred really needs you. Will you work with him again? And he had wound up in a rehab. And so I said, sure, and I went to see him, and he's like, oh, not you again. How much money am I going to lose today or something? And we had this banter, you know, I teased him, oh, you know, well, it'd be $10,000 for today, but no worries or something. And quickly, within 2 days, I had managed to make an appeal for his Medicare termination. He had been told he would only be covered for a couple of more days, and he had actually signed a form saying that he was not going to appeal. He didn't understand what the form was. He was having a lot of pain, probably medicated for that pain, and just irritable and not really wanting to attend to this. So, you know, right on the spot, I had work to do because I felt that I knew that he was not appropriate for him to be terminated from his rehab services. And, you know, 3 days later, I got him another week worth of paid rehab. So, you know, it's things like that that are, you know, penny wise and pound foolish if you don't, you know, recognize what you might get from a service like mine, or if it's somebody who's choosing, I know I want to go to assisted living, you know, how do I pick? And, you know, they can hire me to help them, guide them in that process as somebody who knows the facilities, who's able to assess their level of functioning and what their needs might be, and to help them find that. And, you know, a mistake in that area, if you make a choice that's not a good match, it's not the end of the world, but it is very expensive.
Yes.
So, you know, that's an example where I believe, and most people would agree, that it's money well spent. But one thing to be cautious of is there are services that provide that kind of service for free. So there are agencies where you can contact them and they will help you find an assisted living, and it costs the elder nothing, but it's a different model because they get commission from the assisted living facilities. So there's a bias there that no matter how kind in your heart you may be as one of these agencies providers, you know, you can't, it's the potential for conflict of interest is too big. So again, you know, you need to know what you're paying for if you hire a private geriatric care manager and what benefits that might offer.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of like nowadays with social media. Like, if you're not paying for the service, you are the service. Meaning, like, they're taking your data. So I mean, it's the same thing. One way or another, somebody's. You know, nothing's for free in this world.
That's right.
So you know, personally, I would rather upfront have to pay somebody that I know that they're going to be an advocate for my needs, rather than wonder what's going on behind the scenes. To, you know, hey, does this assisted living offer a bigger commission check than this one? So all of a sudden you've tore that one three times versus this one time. So yeah, I mean, that's always, you know, a concern. And you know people, I think a big thing for people need to understand with all of us sitting here is that you can hire us for as much as you want or as little as you want for as long as you want. So if it's only a little bit to help me figure out what assisted living to go to, that's okay. You know, we understand that's part of the
gig.
That's part of what we do. So
yeah, and I think with a job like yours, I describe it to people that the people that are really good at what they do, you don't know what they do. Because, you know, you just make things happen. You're a behind the scenes kind of person. And I will be on the phone with some of our clients and say, you know, maybe a geriatric case manager would be helpful. And because I'm spending way more time on the phone than I really should. And they're like, well, what do I need that for? I have you. It's like, you know, you want to keep a good rapport, but there are things that they really, you could do in half the time that I would do, and it's not my role. Or as you say to a caregiver, it's not in my scope of practice to be your geriatric care manager.
Right.
But again, it's a not understanding just how many little pieces there are to the puzzles that you solve daily.
Yeah. I mean, I think that adult children of elders that live far away, they're not local, they're not near their folks, and they come in for Christmas to visit or something, and they're like blown out of the water about what's changed since the year before when they saw them, see them or something. And they become quickly overwhelmed. Well, what do I do? How do I help my mom or dad? And it's a matter of breaking down the many pieces. And often it's not appreciated until someone tries themselves to do it from afar.
Yeah. And doesn't come with a manual.
No. And even if someone moves into, say, assisted living, for example, folks often don't really go in with their eyes open in terms of knowing what they do and do not provide, what are realistic expectations, and it can really make a difference. When I've advocated for people, I know the hard questions to ask, and I know what the answers should, you know, the realm of what the answer should be. And sometimes folks will say, well, I'm choosing between this assisted, you know, they're very capable, proactive people, and I'm choosing between this one and that one. How do I decide? Or even if they have said, I think I want to go here, I may go in with them and ask the executive director very pointed questions that pertain to that person's needs. And it can help make that decision clear that this is not the right place, or it is the right place. Or if you want to go there, you should expect that you're going to need this service provided privately, you know, whether it's something of a medical nature that they don't provide, or, you know, how many, if you want to shower every day, that may be a very difficult thing to have the assisted living provide support for. Often they'll offer that you can have it for three days a week. And for many and most that's okay. But, you know, if you want 5 showers a week or 7 showers a week, you may be prepared to bring in somebody a few days a week to supervise that, for example.
Now, is that something that that happens a lot in the sense that you had previously just spoken about kind of out-of-state families? Is that a big portion of your business where people have, you know, it's happening more and more? It's with me as well. My dad's down in Florida, but, you know, either the residents are here and the adult children have moved, you know, miles away. Is that a big portion of what you help out with?
Yeah, I would say about half my caseload are folks that live here and their loved ones live somewhere else. It can go in both directions. I have worked with adult children in locally that I meet with them to support them in the care of their parent somewhere else.
All right.
Sometimes I will contact a care manager in the area where their parent lives and we'll work collectively. So there's lots of opportunities for that. But I would say about half of my clients fall into that category. And I also have a few clients that really don't have anybody. And so I'll be hired by the elder law attorney be their person. They're, you know, I am soup to nuts.
Yep.
So it's making sure that they have, you know, whether they have the right services if need be, making sure how do they have, you know, how are they getting their groceries? What are they eating? What's growing in the refrigerator? How are they getting their prescriptions? Are they taking them correctly? If not, problem solving, making sure they go to their appointments and then arrange all the follow-up that goes with that. And communicate between different caregivers so that everybody's in the loop. I may hire a daily money manager who will come and help them pay their bills, but just sort of overseeing the whole thing. And it, you know, it's they can become very intimate, special relationships, but pose certain challenges, of course. But sometimes the situations really are like that.
All right.
It must be challenging if the client, the elderly person, is the one that's out of town because you don't have that FaceTime.
Yeah.
How do you get to know that person to do what's best for them when it's the family here and Nana is in another state?
Well, I'm glad you asked that. I mean, the role is very different, of course.
Yeah.
But sometimes just working with it, a lot of times people just need emotional support and get a lot of relief in talking to me, giving them permission to not, you know, things they don't want to do. Often they'll say, well, you know, I feel like maybe my mother should come live with me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the elder doesn't want it. The child doesn't want it. And giving people permission that's not always the best thing.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's really, in my experience, the exception where that is a good solution.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, just reminding people that, you know, they're doing a good job. Again, talking with people, professionals in the community where the elder lives.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes, especially when it's out of state, you know, states, everything functions differently. So I may get the information from the care manager in that state and then explain it and help the person locally to me figure out how to set things up.
And I was going to ask you, and you were in the same vein of that interesting dynamic when you're working with a senior out of state with adult children in the state. Is that where, you know, and you're looking to work with another GCM or maybe to introduce a GCM to find, they're hiring you to find a local GCM?
Yes.
To be able to help out with that. Is that where like your Aging Life Association comes in? Is like, I think that's kind of important. We talk to our families about the Home Care Alliance of Massachusetts and what we view it as trying to be a validation that we're trying to do a good job.
Mm-hmm.
By no means are we perfect, but our intentions are in the right place versus some of the chop shops that are out there. what can, you know, I imagine there's not a whole lot of regulation in your industry like there isn't in mine. So we're almost self-regulating in some ways with these associations.
Correct.
Can
yeah.
you speak with that about that Aging Life Association and how that works and what people should look at that as when it comes to GCMs?
Yeah, I mean, I think you raise a very good point. Anybody could hang a shingle and say they're a geriatric care manager. To be a member of the Aging Life Care Association means that you've met stringent
qualifications.
Thank you. We have to demonstrate to become a geriatric care manager through the Aging Life Care Association. You have to demonstrate that you are proficient in crisis intervention, helping people with disabilities and managing mobility and such, financial guidance, guidance around housing, how to work with families that are in conflict or have differences of opinion, letting people know you have to be knowledgeable about the resources available to them and how to access them. You're their advocate in times of need in that regard, and have some legal knowledge as well. And so we have to demonstrate proficiency in those eight different areas. And you also have to have had a number of years' experience working with the older adult population, and to become an advanced practitioner, such as myself, you have to pass a certification exam, which tests you on those eight things that I identified, and you have to adhere to a certain code of ethics, and have continuing education going on. So it really identifies and helps you recognize somebody who meets all those
criteria. And I would say, and to be fair, you know, when you say hang a shingle, I feel like that's truly what home care can do, because, you know, one of the things that I've noticed with any geriatric care manager that I've met that I think is worth their salt is usually they have some type of professional background that is listed on their cards or their LinkedIn, whether it's a registered nurse, occupational therapist, whether they've been a social worker in the past. Usually there is a foundation of some type of experience that is dealing with, you know, some type of degree involved in getting certain qualifications done. While with private home care, I mean, I could be, you know, Matt Foley, the man living down by the river one day, and then the next day open it up my own shop.
Right.
So it can, that's a bit more of an issue, I think, in my industry than it is in yours, but there still needs to be due diligence. Anybody can make a business card and put a bunch of letters at the end of it and say, hey, look at me, I'm really great. But I think that having and the Aging Life Care is nationwide, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm. So they have their own individual chapters within the states, of course. But I think that's really key as well, because, you know, it's a brand that you can use and recognize whether you're in Massachusetts all the way out to California.
Absolutely. And when I need to refer someone to a care manager elsewhere, that's where I go. I go on the website and I read people's credentials, what their specialties are, and I can make people give people recommendations that way. But also, we're a network among ourselves. We have a listserv both nationally and locally, and you can say who is a good person in Idaho in this near this small town or something, and people will write to you, and you can sort of check out. And sometimes I've called the care managers and screened them for the local person here. As you point out, the people that are professional care managers that didn't just decide to be that one day, for the most part, we're either licensed nurses, social workers, occupational therapists, physical therapists, and there's some people in the organization that have degrees in gerontology, but I believe they also have to have certain professional clinical experience to become a member. So I find being an occupational therapist a huge benefit in this role. Most care managers are social workers, and when I first was hired by Springwell to be the, you know, to start this geriatric care management program, I was a little apprehensive because I didn't know any OTs that had this role, and there were things that some parts of that role that I really wasn't familiar with. And fortunately, I had a wonderful supervisor at Springwell. Her name is Jo White. And working at Springwell, which is what's called an aging service access point, it's really one of the many state programs where you help low-income seniors with entitlements and getting them services. So I was the only care manager there, and it was the only program that was private pay. But I had the opportunity to learn a lot about entitlements because most of my clients came from these subsidized programs that the rest of Springwell provided, or from protective services, which was another whole education in itself. But I was able to learn some of the missing pieces that I had in my clinical background. And people like having me as an occupational therapist as well as a geriatric care manager, and many people that contact me say that is how they chose me, because they may have worked with occupational therapists in the past, and though I'm not going to be practicing occupational therapy with them in this role, it's a very functional state of mind and very pragmatic, and I think people respond to that.
You're the mechanical engineer of the healthcare.
Yeah,
is the way I've always thought OTs were underrated. Were you an OT first and then got your social work degree, or how did that evolve for you?
Well, I am a licensed social worker, but I've never practiced in that role, so it's a good credential to have. It's a good background, and it represents my expanse of know-how in the field. Mm-hmm. But I worked as a, you know, I started out working as an occupational therapist. And, you know, I loved that role. And I was able, like I said, I explored lots of areas of it, always working with adults. And as my career went on, focusing more on geriatrics. And that was really my love. And I'm just so appreciative that I was able to take the next step and be a care manager. And it allows for a lot of creativity. Mm-hmm. And it's very personal. So it's a really nice match for me, I feel.
That's great. Well, when we started this podcast, you were a little behind the scenes. You were worried that we weren't going to have much to talk about and that we didn't know how long this was going to go. And we're at the 53rd minute now. So I think you got comfortable real quick once you're talking about something you know about so well, it's you get in that flow, and all of a sudden you're like, hey, we could talk all day about this. Is there anything else that you want to let the audience know about what you do, how to contact you, whatever it might be regarding your business or anything to do about geriatric care managers as a whole?
Wow. It's easy to reach me. My name is Kathy Kemp, and so my website is www.kathykemp.com. And so that's easy to find me there, and you'll have all my other contact information there. I have resources posted and lots of information both about Aging Life Care Association and also about me personally. And I'm open to having conversations or email introductions and share more about myself and if I might be able to help you. And there are cases where someone will call me and it's not my area of expertise, or it really isn't specifically a care manager that they want, and I'm more than happy to refer them to the right person. And sometimes that is a care manager closer to where they live.
Yeah.
Even, you know. So I would say if you're, you know, if you're even thinking about a care manager, I would encourage you to talk to more than one. I would choose that those people either from someone you've learned of by word of mouth or by a trusted elder law or financial planner, but to go on the Aging Life Care Association website, and you'll at least have the starting point of knowing that you have somebody that is qualified to do that role, and start there. But I would, if you look on the Aging Life Care Association website, they will give suggestions of questions you should ask a care manager. And I, you know, a good care manager likes a client who has shopped around and knows, you know, knows what they're looking for in terms of meeting, you know, the personality style or the
chemistry,
the price
yeah.
range. And yeah, it, I think that's the key thing.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we certainly all get the calls where somebody's just starting the searching process. So you know that there's a lot more steps involved usually than to sign on the dotted line or whatever it might be. But, you know, when somebody knows what they're looking for and what they need, you know, that makes the experience a lot easier, where you're like, all right, now we can talk about the nitty gritty about what is specifically needed for your situation, right, rather than, hey, what is private home care in general? Mm-hmm. We're happy to have that conversation.
Well, the opening line, what are your rates?
Yeah,
you don't know anything about what you do.
Yeah.
What are your rates?
Yeah.
Because I think that's something where someone is generally comfortable because they're negotiating in all kinds of things in their lives. But as far as what you do, they are in no man's land. So it's a very awkward thing for them to do.
But it is what it is. And you get everybody that you get every walk of life that comes and gives us a call and gives you a call, just trying to figure out what's going on. But I think it's good. I think, you know, the senior care industry, there's not as much publicity on what we individually do. And that's why we did the podcast. That's why I have guests like you on, because it's like, hey, listen, let's spotlight somebody for an hour and let's talk about what they do. And then, you know, we can have you come back and we can dig deeper into some other topics that we didn't get into. But it's important to kind of shed light on, hey, this, we can do, you need us to do stuff with caregiving, we're great at that. You need us to figure out everything outside of caregiving, that's not our scope of service, and that's where you need to call Kathy. That's where you need to call somebody else, and then we can work together in tandem and say, hey, listen, oh, so this is what's going on. All right, we can help have our caregivers, position our caregivers to assist with that as much as we can, but we don't mow lawns. You know, we don't make sure the heating's working.
We don't fix air conditioners.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, we don't work with the pharmacy to make sure that the meds are coming every single Tuesday, come hell or high water. Like, that's not the position that we're in, and that's where somebody like you is so vital. And that's why we like
love
it.
You.
Well, yeah, but we do
your
feel
profession.
Bad. We do feel bad when we're like, when we've referred somebody in the past and we're like, the family dynamics are a little bit difficult on this one, like, but that's part of the
right,
job.
That's
so,
right.
You know, but sometimes we feel bad on those ones, but
yeah, we apologize first.
Well, as the care manager, often you're the person that juggles all the balls.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, and that can be a great relief for family too. And so I think, One plea I would make to older adults and families is to plan ahead and don't wait until something really bad happens. I mean, often I'm called in that situation. You know, my 95-year-old aunt fell and she's in the hospital and
she's,
you know,
coming home in three days.
We have no idea, like, you know, what the next step might be or whatever. It's always good to be ahead of the ball, just line up, have your ducks in a row, know what plan B would be and who you would go to. Even if you don't need that service, take that first step. We can just make a plan of action if and when.
Yep.
And there's great comfort in that, and
preach,
it pays
Kathy.
Off.
Preach. Keep going. Because we talk about that all the time. Like, you don't want to be calling a home care company when mom's discharging in 4 hours.
Yes.
Like, that's you're already behind the eight ball on that.
And we can make it happen, but yes, that's not, and money wise, that's a much more expensive route to take as well.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. Oh yeah, we charge an extra 50% on that one all the time. No. Just joking. We don't.
Yeah.
But no, absolutely, you know, that's just, you know, you're trying to you know, tread water at that point in time and not go under when you're making calls like that frantically to people on a Friday at 2 o'clock trying to get the weekend covered. So
say 3 o'clock on Friday, the world takes on a whole new look when it comes to discharges. Yeah. And we had a Christmas Eve one year and we pulled it off, but it was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
You know, don't want to have to do too many of those.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate it. I think that people will get a lot of benefit on understanding what geriatric care managers do and knowing more about what options they have for their loved ones out there. So thank you.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure talking with you. Anytime.
Excellent. Great. Excellent. Well, that's all we've got for. We've got 59 minutes of outstanding education for you.
That's right.
Hopefully you appreciate that. If there are people out there that want to be guests, we don't need you necessarily just to be in the Lexington area. We can have somebody's point of view from across the country, and we welcome that. This is all about educating the people that are out there and trying to get people, like Kathy said, to plan, to come up with an action plan on when things go wrong, because they do. But anyways, thank you all very much for listening. We appreciate that, and we will catch you on the next one.